$200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series. Yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
1 Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, tiny-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
The Belmont Stakes returns to Belmont Park Saturday, June 11th. Tickets to the top of the stretch, the premier trackside picnic area with personal grills are almost sold out. Tickets to the test of the champion are on sale at BelmontStakes.com. Hurry before it's gone.
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two. And we will have Mike Welch live. Mike is going to hang around. He just doesn't want to hang around so long that he ends up getting wet. Because apparently he's acting like the skies are going to open here. I don't know. I didn't check the forecast. When you're in a place like Sanibel Island for a week, you don't have to check any forecast because it was like 86 every single day and without a cloud in the sky. The same cannot be said for upstate New York or even the Hudson Valley. And Meg, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, no, I know Sanibel Island. I'm happy that you got to have a good time there. It's a special place. You got me thinking about how I'm going to figure out a way to get down there again sometime soon.
Well, we had such a nice week. I didn't expect the vacation like that. I obviously did the show Monday through Friday, but by 12:20, I had to be next to her on the beach. So if I hadn't gotten there, she started sending texts. Where are you? Let's go. She. If it's such a thing as being a taskmaster on vacation, she was doing that. But
you're like me. Someone needs to tell you once in a while to slow down and actually live life. So I'm glad
true.
She did that.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. I do have the car. I was thinking driving this morning to Churchill that whoever gets in the car today, they're gonna think they're on. Maybe like a fishing party boat, like you take off Long Island, because there is a bit of a salty, briny smell to the car. I've got a box full of shells that it's impossible not to scoop the shells up. So there's a little bit of a a little bit of a shellish smell that's, I think, pervading the car. I noticed that today.
That's fantastic. Good. Good.
I'll take. I put up one picture of me with a handful of shells that you're in the surf and they just come rolling up to you. And you're like, all right, I got to pick this one up.
And
it's funny.
Intact, which is what's great. They're pristine.
Well, the funny thing is that you start at the beginning of the week, the first couple of days, you think, oh my God, look at this. And you save it. And then by the end of the day, you're throwing those same ones back. You're thinking, ugh, this is nothing special. And because it's pretty funny. So we had a great time. I know you've got a bit of a tight schedule today, so we'll dive into the weekend action, and obviously the two New York Stallion Series races that had notable upsets. You had Chad sweep the two turf races, and then we'll talk about Oaklawn as well. For a seemingly placeholder weekend of racing, it ended up being a pretty good few days.
No, it really did. It's interesting. Chad's colt that won the Woodhaven on the turf. I'm so bad with names. I just should have pulled it up. Anyway, I thought he might have been a little dressed up. Because he won at Monmouth and then he won in Tampa. No, he's for real. He's got a turn of foot. I mean, a real turn of foot. And I thought he was very impressive.
Unanimous consent.
Unanimous consent. And then the filly, good matchup with her and Pizza Bianca. I thought, honestly, great racing. And then, of course, I was very happy with the results for the Stallion Stakes because Trevor McCarthy won both of them on long shots, so I was happy for my son Joe and him. It was all good, all good.
Talk for a second before we fold in what went on at Oaklawn on the broadcast. This Gold Rail situation, Rich, that it's hard to believe that it could go on. I mean, there's two portions of that discussion. One is whatever Glenn Kozak and the team are doing, to try to mitigate it. But what about in the room, and what about guys that seem oblivious to it? And then, of course, there's guys that understand that there's an opportunity to take advantage of it, especially when you're running against, 2-5 shots.
Well, that's one of the strengths that I think that Trevor brings to the table, amongst others. I'm not just him, but because he won those two races, it's an easier segue. Really paying attention, really doing your homework. If you're worried about, shooting pool or playing ping pong and you're not paying attention to the track, shame on you, because someone else is. And they're going to have a distinct edge, especially when it's as tilted, as it's been towards inside speed. I go back to, and Trevor does this too, which not because I talked to him about it. I'm sure his dad, Mike, who was a terrific rider, talked to him about it. Watching replays and knowing who has good gate speed, who is fast, but maybe their first few steps aren't fast. And that gives you an opportunity to seize control of a race. And, he does that consistently. I mean, that kid does his homework. He shows up very prepared. He's very regimented. He and I were laughing about something. I said I wound up going to, I stayed down the whole week this week, Thursday through Sunday, and I came home last night. I said, yeah, I went to a restaurant, I'm friends with the owner, and I just wanted a grilled piece of fish and a salad because I felt like, I ate too heavy the night before, and he started laughing because you don't have to make weight anymore. I said, yeah, but you get so regimented that you really look at it like, well, why would I eat that? Should I do this? He goes, my father's the same way. He goes, and he thought he'd be eating ice cream and cake, and he can't do it. And I said, you'll be the same. Right now, you'll fight me for a Snickers bar, but when you're done riding, you'll go, why would I even eat that? So it's just funny. He's in that place where you're just, you're looking at life through a keyhole. But it's paying off for him. It's working. another guy, Kendrick Carmouche, always aware of the way the track's playing. He was leading rider. Dylan Davis has been locked in. You know, he wound up coming up second. If he doesn't get DQ'd in the last race the night before, he winds up being leading rider. So you think about that. But if a guy hasn't picked up on it by now, then they're just oblivious, and they may be. You know, every rider has strengths and weaknesses, Steve. I talk about this all the time, that some guys physically, they just can make things happen and pick horses up and get more out of them. Their physicality is their strength. And then some guys, it's their mind, how tactical they are, pulling off strategies and figuring out, breaking down a race properly. Now, obviously, your greatest riders have all of these attributes, these different things that make a great rider. But if a guy hasn't picked up on the fact that inside speed is dominant at Aqueduct over the last several weeks, they're never going to pick it up.
Now, it makes it hard. It sort of skews. I don't think it's an issue when it comes to for owners. It's great, and if you got a savvy rider on, everybody's aware and takes advantage. But for horse players, it just is maddening. You like to think, or you hope that your rider, if you're playing, is going to do what he can or she can to approach it properly and take advantage if that's the case, or do what they can to try to just stay in contact. I mean, if you're an off the pace type, stay on the rail as long as you can before moving outside to try to run some people down. But as horse players, Rich, you kind of throw up your hands at times, because you can't assume that the less the horses that are a little less likely on paper, you don't know if it's enough to carry them like it did, frankly, the last couple of days, and particularly in those two stakes.
Well, no, listen, it's a great point, but unfortunately that becomes part of what you have to handicap. As a handicapper, you have to know which guys are locked in, which guys are seemingly a bit oblivious. Now, all that being said, if you've got a horse that has a particular style and you can't just change a horse's style, it's nice in theory, but it's just not the reality of it, right? But that being said, the guys that just seemingly show up to the room probably a little bit late, not getting there at 10 o'clock in the morning right after they get off their last horse, which is what you have to do. If you want to be a successful rider at this level, that's what you have to do. You have to get there. Like, I never went home in between working horses. I'd get to Belmont at 6 in the morning or even earlier and work until 10:30, 11, whatever it might have been. And then I went off to the room to get ready to ride. And, Carmella understood it. This was, what I did. This is how I had to approach it. It wasn't, I'll come home, I'll have breakfast, I'll lounge around. It's just not the reality of a jockey's life. If you want to compete at the highest level, that's the reality of it. I watch them. I see them when they're coming in. I can be on set and I'll see the guys trickle in close to post time, and I laugh to myself. You're not. You may think you're preparing. You may think you're doing your job. You're not. You're not. You're not taking advantage of everything afforded you as far as for tactics and things like that. I'm not going to call any names because I'm not going to embarrass anybody. But if you think showing up at 11:30 in the morning to the jocks room drinking a milkshake is going to make you a top rider, you got another thing coming.
Turn to Oaklawn, Rich, and get a couple of thoughts. I had Dallas here live a couple of minutes ago, and we talked about the upset in the Oaklawn handicap. But the most interesting race of the weekend, leading up, was the Grade 1 Apple Blossom. And here was Latruska that People, for some reason, I mean, I understand the reason, you know, but, you know, the idea that, you know, her comeback race to start the season wasn't strong enough, you know, it was kind of strange. I mean, it looked to me like she had a pace advantage, and I thought Clairière, you know, Clairière obviously, you know, was the first alternate. And, you know, CC, I thought, was going to be up against it a little bit pace-wise. But Letruska, I mean, this is really a special mare. And Fausto Gutierrez, you know, clearly, you know, bringing her along with a whole season approach in mind.
Yeah, definitely a different approach than last year when, you know, she had already had four starts by now last year.
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely a different approach. And I think he recognized she was a little bit of a spent mare by the time we got to, you know, Breeders' Cup time. And now it's her second start. And what do you want from a return race? A return race is supposed to be a race that kind of springboards you to the next thing. And that's exactly what she got out of her first race. Who wouldn't like a prep like that? You know, you want to win these races, but at the same time, you want to use them as building blocks, not something to tear one down. And she got everything you wanted out of a first start back. You know, I go back to so many people get caught up in, and there's so many tools to handicapping. I'm not saying that one's less important than another, but don't get so hung up in, well, it wasn't that fast a race. Use your imagination. Look at how a horse does something. Look at you know, their ears. Look how they're coming through the stretch. You know, some people, dismiss that. I think it's a mistake to dismiss that. You have to be able to, you know, have enough vision to see when a horse is shutting it down. Their stride goes from, their extension to their just, you know, kind of coasting in. And some people say, well, you know, you can't, you know, quantify it in any way. Well, again, that's where you're watching races. You know, figures are one thing. Of course, they're important. No one's going to dismiss that idea. But at the end of the day, it's also about, you know, how a horse does something and what they get out of it.
Well, now she'll try to come back and repeat as well in the FIPS and can look forward to
and
that.
Steve, Clairière was good. I mean, I think
yeah.
She's made a big step from 3 to 4. I mean, she's a player. She's a little... You know, always tends to be just a little touch slow the first step or two. Letruska broke out and kind of took her space a little, so that might have compromised her, like cost her a little bit of position at the break. But horses are like water. Water flows to empty space. Horses tend to run to empty space. It was just one of those things. And Letruska is also the kind of mare, when she gets a challenge, she bears down. She finds more. So I'm not convinced if they'd have gone another quarter of a mile, Clairière's ever getting by her as long as she sees her.
Well, as we've been sort of reiterating, every week, Rich, I mean, we're a third of the way into the year, and, you know, next week, essentially, when April ends, and every weekend there's further enhancement of divisions. You know, the three returning fillies yesterday in the Memories of Silver, you know, including the winner out of the Breeders' Cup, Pizza Bianca, and Consumer Spending. You know, every division, three-year-old fillies on turf there. I mean, we look forward every year to the Edgewood on Derby Day and on Derby Weekend. The race is always a harbinger of good things. The older horses every week, the four-year-olds, just keep coming back. And even the sprint division, I think, has, you know, with the return last week of Jackie's Warrior, it really a third of the year in, you know, with the three classic weekends to come, it feels like a very good year is in the works here. Anybody that's not appreciating, you know, a steady stream of not just returning stars, but, you know, some horses establishing themselves. I touched on Scalding, you know, winning the Ben Ally for Shug. Horses won four straight. Here's an emergent player.
Absolutely. I think I'm really excited. I think we've got a really good group of three-year-olds. I like this crop. And then you add into all these horses returning that, you know, again, Latruska, 6 years old back, CeCe, 6 years old back. This is what builds fan bases. I grew up watching Forgo every year. It was exciting. I couldn't wait to, you know, see the entries because I knew Forgo was going to be in the entries on, you know, one of these allowance races they would make go for him by, you know, usually the end of May, middle to the end of May, and start his campaign. That's when people start really falling in love with horses and appreciating, because they have these comprehensive campaigns, and I love it. I mean, I'm thrilled that, you know, we've got these mares that they're good. They're really good. You know, I hope people appreciate just how good they are.
We also, I suppose, on that topic, Channelmaker at age 8 makes his seasonal debut and wins that Elkhorn.
Man, you want to talk about a horse, to me, like that typical bicycle horse. He runs with his head up in the air. And it seemingly gives the riders, you know, a little bit of a hard time because, you know, you almost got to be peeking around him to see what's in front of you. And he just keeps finding. As long as you keep riding, he keeps finding. People should watch that replay. And when they hear me say, I think this is a bicycle horse, he embodies exactly what I'm talking about. It looks like he's going to get swallowed coming off the 3/16 pole. Luis Saez bears down on him, and he keeps finding. You know, he drops his head a little bit, never all the way, you know, down, but a little bit where he levels off a little bit. The ears go back. You know, he digs in a bit more. He's a bicycle horse. That's the best way to describe him.
Couple of minutes, Rich. The season ends at Aqueduct, and the scene will now shift over to Belmont. I guess that's must save you at least 15 minutes, right? On the drive, a little bit better than making your way to Aqueduct.
Easily a half hour, because I don't have to deal with the Van Wyck or the Belt Parkway.
Yeah, exactly.
And Van Wyck crushes you. What was that Seinfeld? Nobody beats the Van Wyck. Nobody beats the Van Wyck. Unbelievable. Naira and, you know, everybody was very nice. I've actually got a little spot where I can crash during the week if I don't want to go home on the backstretch of Belmont. So I'm back to where I started, basically, which is great. Thursday, I moved in, and the Rangers were playing the Islanders at the new arena, so I walked over, I went to a game, I walked back to the barn area, felt like I did when I was, you know, 15 years old, living on the backstretch again, and it's comfortable. You know, I can shower, I've got suits there now, so when I go down Thursday night, if I'm on late shifts, certainly Thursday, Friday, I won't go home, but if I'm on a late shift Saturday, just go home Sunday night. And it's great. I mean, I already feel like so much more refreshed because of not having to do that 200-mile commute this week. And I think it's important because I was starting to get ground down. Lost weight, didn't understand why, been going through all these tests, and I think a lot of it's just the commute and stress.
Well, no, and I'm glad to hear that because you had mentioned that you had an appointment. Good.
Yeah. So it was good. First thing I did though is what they had a bed from the previous tenant, which, and again, it's nice. It's not the Taj Mahal, but it's nice. It's a hell of a lot nicer than my first room at the track many years ago. I pulled that bed out of there. I had a bed delivered, so I had a brand new bed in there. Microwave, refrigerator. So no, it's good. And I like to walk. So in the evening, I walk around, and it's my comfort zone. You know, Belmont Park. And now today, unfortunately, Jack's in surgery. Now I had to drop him off. He blew out his ACL. Dog Jack. Yeah, second time he did it, but a different leg this time.
An ACL.
Yeah, he had surgery almost 3 years ago now, and he went off chasing something, and he came back on three legs, and we took him, and he blew it out again, so the vet was able to fit him in this morning. I dropped him off early, now I'm taking Lila and Tino for their checkup and then to get groomed because Carmella wants all their hair off for the summer. So that's why I'm not going to be on with you quite as long today. But you know, I told you, right, Easter Sunday night we got home and the bear was in the driveway.
Yeah.
And the dogs have been acting, you know, kind of on high alert, and then Jack ran off the other night and he came back lame. I got to think it was probably chasing the bear off, you know.
Oh, that's funny.
So, yeah, yeah. So I feel bad. This morning when I dropped him off, I leave him. He's looking at me like, no, don't leave me. Not this again.
Oh, well, Godspeed to him. And, it's funny. I don't know why you made me think of this, but did you happen to catch the video? Tina showed it to me. I don't know if it was a TikTok thing or whatever. She's constantly showing me these.
Carmella too.
Well, there was what looked to be a kind of a hunter jumper, you know, barn scenario. It looked like, you know, a pretty well appointed shed row with, you know, pretty ornate looking stalls, and it had a camera system. Girl's walking her horse, and as she goes by a stall, horse lunges out of his stall, grabs her by the back of her neck and her ponytail and her jacket, and I mean flung her to the ground. It is something. I don't know. I'm going to ask Tina to send it to me. I watched it four times. And I don't think he was doing it. It didn't look like he was trying to bite her per se. I don't know if he was being playful or if he was annoyed that she was paying attention to another horse. But it was something. I mean, lifted her off the ground.
Oh, listen, people a lot of people that don't work and don't realize just how strong they are. I mean, when my daughter started walking horses and even just, you know, hunter jumpers, people have this tendency, like they'll wrap the lead rope around their hand or like entwine a finger just thoughtlessly. Horse will jerk your finger right off. I mean, if they pull back and your finger's in a loop there, take a bite of your finger. I mean, you know, they're just so powerful, and people don't realize. And, you know, we've had horses, mean, tough horses, you know, when I was a kid working with Son of a Dodo and stuff. If they got a hold of you, they pull you over the webbing into the stall. You know, and they're just that capable of doing it. That's, man, if you think about it, send it to me. Carmella's not home today, so I'm running around doing all this stuff. I'd like to see it. Hey, real quick, let's talk Derby stuff, because I got...
I was good. That was my getaway question. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, I told you, I've been pretty locked in on my top three, Epicenter, and watching him train, he just keeps strengthening his case as far as I'm concerned. And again, admittedly, I'm watching it on videotape, I'm not there. But I love everything I'm seeing from him. I think he's the package, he's going to be very tough to beat. Zandon, his training, I loved his half mile, but more importantly, and maybe even talk to Mike about this. I'd love to kind of hear his opinion.
Hold on. He's right. He literally just put the headset on.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. What'd you think of Zandon's gallop out? I just love the way he continued. I thought it was terrific.
Yeah. I mean, he's the top work I've seen so far. I just I wish I could have seen it in person. He probably would have appreciated it even more, but just he was just awesome, just so powerful, and just seemed like he got stronger the further he went. So, he moves right to the top of the list with that work, and I think I even speculated that off of that work, if everything being equal now, he may be the favorite over Epicenter just because of the buzz that work might generate. Just my opinion there, but still got a couple of weeks to go, so we'll see. There'll be another set of works next week.
I was impressed with that. Cyberknife, I was impressed with his work.
I thought his work was good, too. They tell me, the guys here, the regulars, that he's a very good workhorse. But
okay.
You couldn't find any fault there. I mean, if you like him coming off of that Arkansas Derby win, and he certainly looks like he's ready to repeat it or move forward for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, he was a horse that, even though he won the Arkansas Derby, was a little bit maybe off my radar, and then that work put him on my radar. But, I mean, at this moment, and like you said, there's another round of works to come. We're still, you know, 12 days out. It would be Epicenter, Zandon, very close. Mo Donegal, because I really liked the mental maturity I saw from him in the Wood Memorial. A horse that never would pick up the bridle as a two-year-old. The rider was always having to ask him, kind of running with the emergency brake on and stops and starts. He had continuity to his run in the Wood. He ran into the bit. He looked like it was the first time to me that I ever thought, wow, this horse finally figured this game out. And I liked what I saw from him in the Wood. I haven't watched or seen him train, so I'll be curious about that and get your opinion. But that's my top three, and Cyberknife is certainly nibbling at the edges now, the way, from what I saw, although what you say about him always being a good workhorse, maybe it isn't as much of a factor. I just thought it was impressive enough.
That's what I've been told. You know, like I said, this is the first time I've seen any of his work, so... but it was very good. Did you see Crown Pride's work on tape yesterday?
I did not. That's one I didn't catch.
Go take a look at it.
You'll
be impressed with him too. He just another one that just kind of accelerated the further he went. And you know, that race, it's hard to get a line on that UAE Derby race, but from what I seem to believe is that he was kind of against the bias that day. And against the grain of the track, and he still won off pretty impressively, and he's looked good in the couple of days I've seen him. He came back out today and was doing figure eights up the chute, you know, day after this work. But go take a look at it. I call him one of my sleeper picks for sure. It's cool. Hard to figure how he classes up with the U.S. horses, but I took a quick look at the sheets, you know, and he's not that far off the big guys, so. If he can move forward a little bit, he might be maybe not a winner, but he's going to be a big price. There's no doubt about that. No matter what, he's going to be a price. I mean, he comes back and works another big work. Who knows? He might work two more times between now and the Derby. You never know with the way they train those horses over there. But, go take a look at that work. I was really impressed. I think you will be too.
Great. I'll check that out. And I'll catch up with you over the next before the Derby again. I'm going to jump off, guys. I'm sorry, just because I got to go.
No, it's fine, Rich. I appreciate it. This was perfect. You got a chance to ask Mike himself, so that was great.
Awesome. Great.
Rich McLeary.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks, Richie. And, of course, Thursday, we'll discuss with Andy tomorrow, opening day at Belmont Park on Thursday. And, Mike, good morning. Here we are.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
You were conspicuous by your absence the last 2 days. The boys were looking for donuts.
Well, they're going to have to wait till tomorrow because yesterday I had Tina with me, and we had to get her to the airport. And then this morning, I got to figure out the secret to get...
The elevator.
The elevator is somehow blocked off.
Yes, I got a lot of steps in Sunday, my first day here. Saturday, I'm sorry.
Unbelievable.
Didn't realize that, but there is a secret elevator that if you're good and you bring special donuts, we may all let you in on.
I love
it. It was a long hike up Saturday, especially making sure I got out up there in time before all the action started, because it starts early around here. One thing about putting in the lights here, it's great to have, but it means a lot more guys are willing to work at 5:15 and 5:30 than at most other places, because the way where it start would be dark. So
let's bring everybody up to speed on the weekend, and certainly anything that went on here during the training session, the videos are available. There was also the first of the works shows that run from 7 to 8 o'clock. Today, Scott Shapiro and Joe Kristofek hosting that. I just retweeted Scott Schapp, put out the link to watch it if you missed it this morning. And if you miss it any day live, you can watch it at your convenience. But, Mike, catch everybody up going back through Friday, Saturday, and Sunday a little bit. Some of the highlights and some of the key Derby horses. You already mentioned Cyberknife. That goes back.
I'll just go down the order that they're listed in the points.
And go ahead.
Start with Epicenter, and he worked here yesterday, and it was a fine work. There was nothing wrong with it. I don't know the horse at all. I always like to see little stronger gallop outs, but in this case, it might not be significant. You know, he eased up a little bit at the end in his gallop out, but overall, it would be nothing from that work that would make you not want to play this horse if this was your horse. So, the same was with Echo Zulu yesterday. You know, the work didn't wow me. This work didn't wow me like maybe a couple of others did, like Zandon's did, but it was certainly fine for what they're probably looking to do, and that's kind of Steve's style anyway.
I was going to say, Asmussen, the camp in general, if you see something fast, it's unusual and exceptional.
And I'm not even talking about fast. You don't need to see fast, but I just like to see, you know, his gallop out was just, again, it didn't wow me, you know, but again, you never know what their thinking is either. I mean, they did nudge him a little bit once he got through the wire to kind of go out, and he did for a little bit, and then he kind of eased up as he got to the, now he went 6 furlongs, so his gallop out is 7. They might not be as significant as a horse that goes 5 and is galloping out 6. They haven't gone quite as far at quite a hard pace, but that was just my impression there. I mean, it wasn't a wow work, but it was very, very good, and I'm sure served its purpose as far as Steve, you know, feels. And I haven't talked to him, and I know he was interviewed on the show this morning, and I'm sure he was very pleased with what he saw from both his horses yesterday. Zandon, you know, again, we just talked about him. I mean, to me, that was a wow work. I just loved everything I saw about it. Just so powerful, and the further he went, you know, looked like the stronger he got, and that's just what I like to see coming into these races. It doesn't always mean they're going to win, but those kind of works have produced many winners in the past. So right now, Zandon would be at the top of my list, not only off that last race, which obviously was terrific. It showed that he could negotiate through traffic and come from behind and pass horses. The owner might not necessarily want to be last early on in the 20-horse Derby field. I mean, he's going to have to be more forwardly placed, or they're really going to have a tough road to hoe when there's 20, you know, you're trying to work your way through. But that last race was super impressive, and then he to bounce out with this kind of a work. So we'll see. He's here now. He actually went out on the track this morning and jogged. I'm sure he'll gallop. We have a regular gallop tomorrow and another work over the weekend, and we'll see how he progresses.
How has your approach, and next week, of course, you know, your final decisions after the draw, DRF correspondents will all, you know, will all put their selections in for the big paper, but how has your thinking changed over this last decade, essentially, and with the point system and with this seeming, you know, lack of serious pace to set up horses like this, and we'll talk about Mo Donegal in a minute. But has it skewed your final Derby selection over the last few years?
Not that much, because usually, because it's a 20 horse field and horses are vying for position early, you will get, you know, a decent enough pace. So if you fancy a horse that needs that in front of him, it usually works out well if your horse can work his way through the traffic and get the trip. Now, last year, I did not envision the race to go like it did, and to see Medina Spirit loosen the lead like that, I didn't expect that, and that obviously, you know, helped propel him to win. I mean, without being loose on the lead, it might have been a different outcome, and maybe those of us who bet on Mandaloon would have actually cash, because he might have actually crossed the wire first if someone had been there to run with Spirit of Medina early. So Medina Spirit early. So again, you always look when you're handicapping a race to see is there a loose speed in the air, and it always moves that horse up quite a bit. I didn't see that last year, and I don't think anybody did.
Nope.
in the way the race developed, and you know, somehow you could look at these, you know, races, you know, for hours and hours and hours and try to predict how the opening quarter mile is going to go and what the pace is going to be like, and then they open the gates and a couple of those horses don't break, and the next thing you know, all the time you put in was wasted and something like that happens. So right now I'm just looking for who I think are the best horses, and as we get closer, and again, the post positions are can be so crucial too. You know, I mean, anytime you ask Jay Pribman from January 1st on until you know, till they draw the race, who he likes. His standard answer is they haven't drawn the race yet, have they? So, and there's something to be said for that that logic. So
no, I won't argue. We're just leading up though, and you know the sort of the mentality. One thing that in addition to the pace scenario and what you know what pace does, it doesn't. It's not just a question of setting up a scenario where a horse gets to, you know, close into a fast pace. It also spreads the field out. And one thing that's happened and is just as much of an inhibiting factor, even if the pace as a group, even if it's a solid pace, if there isn't anybody stretching the field out and creating some gap, they're all bunched up. And that is the scenario that's more difficult for horses in the second half of the field, because instead of having room to wait and basically, you know, idle and get ready to make their run, they're stop and go, stop and go, stop and go, checked up, and it interferes with their, you know, with their whole approach to the race.
Right. But my thinking is, in a 20-horse field, you could sort of predict, you know, if you handicap a race long enough and whatever, use all whatever pace figures and where horses maybe should be or might be about, but you can't predict at all, you know, what kind of traffic you're going to get. Yeah. And again, who's going to break slow and how some of this is going to change. So, you know, after a while, it just becomes an effort in futility trying to predict how it's going to come, because most of the time it doesn't work out the way you expect it to. Yes, there are horses sometimes you can predict are going to be loose on a lead, or there's going to be a pace duel and your close is going to have that. But when there's 20 of them, I mean, it's just, you know, it at times it gets kind of random out there, and you just really have to hope, you know, you look for the best horse, and just then you need a lot of luck. I mean, in any race, you need a lot of luck. And the bigger the fields, the more luck you need. And there isn't a bigger field than this one unless you're going over hurdles somewhere.
The Grand National.
Right.
You mentioned going in order, and White Abarrio on tape, but...
No, I saw him.
You saw him live.
I saw him live 2 weeks ago. I did see the work on tape yesterday. I really liked his work, first work out of the Florida Derby. It was 3/8, but really a lot more. He galloped out real well, but it was 3/8 galloping out 5. Yesterday he went 5/8 galloping out 6. I didn't like it as much because I just thought he kind of had to be really sent hard to finish that last eighth, and then looked on tape like he kind of shut down a little bit and didn't go on like I expected he might. And especially in sharp contrast to what I've been seeing from Simplification in his works of the pair. Training-wise, I prefer Simplification, just what I've seen in the morning. You know, the fact that they're going 1.25 miles, and I just think he might be more suitable to get the distance. White Abarrio, too, look, he's done nothing wrong. He's got one loss on his resume, and that was here at Churchill, granted. But I thought he ran well that day against maybe a little more seasoned bunch at the time. I thought the track was a little biased on Florida Derby Day. I thought the further out you were, the better off you were. And White Abarrio got that trip. The horse that didn't get that trip
Simplification.
Exactly. So when we get down to him, we could talk about that.
Mo Donegal next on the list, and the whole Pletcher contingent out there and now on a morning basis.
Yes. I did not see his work the other day. I don't probably need to. It was obviously a maintenance half mile coming out of the wood, you know, 2 weeks, you know, after that. I'm sure he'll have his big work, you know, as opposed to the Asmussen horses who had their big works this weekend. He'll have his bigger work next week. So he looks fine. I watched him gallop the last couple of days. He's looking good out there.
We'll keep it in order for
The McPeak horses, Tis the Bomb and Smile Happy. They went 5/8 in company, and I think it was a minute flat. It went pretty easily. Again, nothing to wow you. The gallops outs were just okay. I saw Kenny say that it was designed to be a maintenance move. I'm not a big fan of either of these two horses at the moment going in, and, you know, I'd have to see more from Smile Happy. I just wasn't happy with what I was seeing from
him. You weren't smiling.
I wasn't happy with what I was seeing from him the last couple of works in Florida. I give him all the credit in the world for running second in the Bluegrass like he did. The other thing that I mentioned when I did a work report on his work, got very hot during the work.
They're hot again this morning.
And he got hot again this morning, yes, exactly. And I don't recall that happening down in Florida, where even though it's unseasonably warm here, it was warmer in Florida.
Yeah.
So to me, you know, I don't know what that necessarily means. It might mean nothing. It might mean something. I don't know. I just don't like seeing it, you know, 2 weeks removed from the Kentucky Derby. So.
The chest, neck.
He was warm this morning, and he was wet. You know, he hadn't done well. He had gone around once, I guess. It wasn't like I saw it when he first broke off. I didn't see him when he first broke off, but he was hot, clearly hot at the end of his work, and clearly hot, you know, during his gallop this morning.
While we've got a second, and only because I noticed her this morning, and you're mentioning McPeak, and not to jump into the Oaks picture, but I will say to you, did you put the watch on Cocktail Moments?
I did see her, yeah.
How about that today?
I did see her. She was full of run. The one thing I noticed about her, and I never noticed before, but I don't know if I've seen her that much, is that she looks very turfy. Her action seemed like she might prefer the turf, and I did see her work the other day. I there's been so many of them, they're kind of muddled, that I did see Cocktail Moments this winter. Of course I did, and I just don't recall noticing the turfy action like I did today. But I'm trying to remember her work. I don't have it in front of me from the other day. She was definitely full of herself this morning. There was no doubt about it going around. I did put the watch on her when she went past the wire and around the turn, and she was doing better than a 2-minute lick for at least 3/8 of a mile. And
yeah.
I was watching her. Yes,
just caught my eye today. I wanted to mention it. With Mig, you brought up Cyberknife and Crown Pride, and Crown Pride, and also Summer Is Tomorrow, who made the first appearance over the weekend yesterday. Talk about particularly Crown Pride. Cyberknife, I think, is a somewhat known quantity at this point. And you indicated.
They tell me that's him. He works that well all the time. I talked to Doug Bradar, who is Florent Drew's agent, and he said Florent was, you know, over the top over the work the other day. He said, you know, he's a good, and he admitted to him, he's a very good workhorse. I think he said that Florent said this was his best one yet. So that's, you know, that's significant coming from the rider. Probably more significant than anything I'll have to say, that's for sure.
Well, and he is a horse who has made, you know, incremental progress. So if it's a question, right, of a horse, you know, quote unquote peaking at the right time in the spring, this is certainly what you want from that standpoint.
Right, and then, yeah, Crown Pride, you know, he was an afterthought going into the race,
right,
and then I saw him yesterday, and you know, he worked an official half and 49-1, it was from the 3/8 of the wire. He actually broke off at the half, went 14, then went 49-1. His last eighth of the 49-1 from the wire out was 12-2. And then the next eighth after that, around the turn, was 11-4. And he did it without being asked and then still kept going on. I probably could have kept the watch on him another eighth, or almost another eighth. He kind of eased up before that, but he just looked terrific. I mean, he moved real smoothly. He did it without being asked. Picked up the pace the further he went. So he caught my eye, I will say. And then, like I said, the MIG, the UAE Derby, you know, I don't know what he was in there beating or anything about it other than the fact that he was wide all the way, and it seemed from what races I saw there that day that he really wanted to be down near the inside. So if you take that into consideration, I saw the sheet numbers. He wasn't that far off of the big ones. And if he ran that number against the bias, I mean, that might, you know, move that up a little bit too. So he's definitely a horse to keep an eye on. I mean, he's going to be 20-something to 1 or whatever. I don't know. You never know these days. But horses you think should be 80 wind up going off 25 in the Derby. But
even if they have two eyes.
So anyway, and like I said, it was great. He came back out today. He showed good energy. It's like the work didn't take anything out of him. I didn't see a lot of him, but I could see that he was back there doing these figure eights, and then he came back out and was, you know, just kind of loping around, taking a look around the track again when the rest of the horses came out after the Derby session. So he was out there for a while, like we've seen with the Japanese horses when they come out here. They don't, you know, go out there for 6 minutes and go back to the barn. They tend to spend more time.
Well, and, you know, give them a chance to, you know, enjoy themselves and, you know, be out of the stall. Tyba is next in the point, on the point list.
Yeah, I haven't seen him. He hasn't worked since that huge effort, and I can see why you might want to back off a little bit on him. That was such a big race, and you might not want to go over the top. Again, to me, I think it's significant that he's only had two starts. It's one thing winning the San Diego Derby in a six-horse field with only one start. I think it's a lot harder to win the Kentucky Derby in a 20-horse field with only two starts. Obviously, it hasn't been done in a long, long time. Not that a lot of horses have come into the Derby over that period of time with only two starts. So the sample is small. But if he wins, and look, he's obviously significantly talented, and the same goes for Charge It. Two lightly raced horses with an abundance of talent, but he's going to have to overcome a lot, and at a relatively sharp price, he won't be one of the favorites, but I'm just going to take a stand against him with the two starts, and if he wins, then hats off to them all.
Back to Crown Pride for 1 second, because Kevin Kirstein just sent me the note that he'll work again on Wednesday, and then again on Sunday.
That was funny. I was saying that to somebody, just kiddingly. You know, he'll work once more, maybe, or him, maybe twice, and there you go.
And maybe three. There may be a Wednesday blowout.
Yeah, you know, you're probably right about that. So, you know, we'll get to validate our opinion of him a couple more times, and we'll see if he moves forward, or significantly if maybe his next works aren't as impressive, and then it takes, you know, takes a little bit away from thinking right now.
You mentioned simplification, and this, along with Messier, to me, Mike, feel like the two horses that are coming in post-hype, having both been beaten in their Derby preps in their two grade ones in the Santa Anita Derby and the Florida Derby, respectively, and simplification really for months on end now has just been, you know, consistent and solid, and it's, you know, we know what to expect from Antonio Seno.
Yeah, I just didn't expect this horse to progress this way. You know, I just thought he was a good miler. I mean, he won that race in the Mucho Macho Man on an easy lead, set a fast pace, kept going against a, you know, very modest field. And, you know, after that incident in the Holy Bull, it kind of changed thinking, because he had to change his running style from going to be what looked like a horse that needed the lead to a horse that now all of a sudden can pass horses. I mean, he did it in the Holy Bull to finish second behind Wide Barrio. I mean, you know, he never had a chance to beat Wide Barrio the way those two horses tripped out that day. Ran very well to be second, and he finished ahead of Modonegal. And then they started training him that way and taking him back and easing him up in the morning. They switched to Jose Ortiz. Jose got along with this horse terrifically in the morning, was able to rate him and get him to finish and gallop out strong. Did that in the Fountain of Youth and assumed that was going to be the plan in the Florida Derby. And for whatever reason, he found himself up there chasing Classic Causeway and then winding up getting pinned down on the rail. Once Classic Causeway stopped, he found himself on the lead with Mark Cassie's horse, and Mark had him pinned down on the inside, shook him off, and, you know, kept going pretty well. He got beat 2.5 lengths against what I thought was, you know, a fairly biased track, and he was certainly against it. So there's reason to believe that if he had taken back and swung outside like Wide Barrio and Charge It did, he might have won that race. So you've maybe got some hidden form here. You're going to get a big price on this horse, but it's what he's done since then that's really wowed me. I mean, his two works after that, you know, on paper, 101-4, and, you know, the 59-3 is quick, and it was a quick track that day. But it's the way he galloped out, both races, I mean, both works. I mean, just terrific. He galloped out in 37-2 for a mile after his last work. And I know the track was fast that day, but he did it effortlessly. Hmm. And, you gotta at least take that into consideration. It's something to, you know, lead you to believe he'll go the mile and a quarter, and I'm going to guess that they're going to take him back, but he's got enough natural speed where he shouldn't get too far back.
Agreed.
So if he can work out the right trip, maybe he's the guy at 20-1. I don't know. You know, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see if Antonio win the Kentucky Derby, but he's going to be a significant long shot, and what he's shown me in the morning and what he's shown me in the afternoon, it's enough to lead me to believe he has a significant chance at a price.
My note is epicenter light.
I guess in a way, you know, I just...
Tactical, you know, he's got tactical
versatility.
He is definitely
tactical. Yeah, no, he's definitely got enough speed. I mean, it actually did him in the Florida Derby, because I know that wasn't the plan. I know, you know, going in, they were planning to take him back off, but he broke well, and he's fast, and he's hard to, you know, and Jose found himself in a spot where if he had tried to grab into him and drag him back, he sort of did that in the Fountain of Youth. He broke well, and he really hauled him back, and I thought maybe that was a mistake to harness him that far back. He took him back to 6th and 7th and circled around and then won, so it seemed to work out well that day. But, you know, Jose found himself kind of in no man's land going to the first turn there. If he had grabbed into him too hard that time, then maybe it things, you know, wouldn't have worked out anyway. But, again, I just thought the track bias was significant enough just between the pressure he endured and the fact that he was down in the deeper going. I think he was every bit as good in that race as White of Barrio and Charge It. But he's one of those horses that can come off of a losing Derby prep.
Exactly.
And because of it, as a better, you're going to reap the rewards if he can bounce back to his best race.
Well, and he's going to be a better price than White of Barrio and Charge It.
Oh, by far.
And you're getting, in some ways, you're getting you know, more experience, and certainly when it comes to Sano, somebody who puts their foot down on the pedal and isn't afraid.
He's an old-fashioned guy, I'll tell you that. I mean, he trains all his horses that way. They'll run and, you know, a week or 2 weeks later, they'll come back and they'll work 5-5-5-5 and then run again and then work 5-5.
No.
I mean,
He'll be fit.
He trains them hard.
You do not have to worry.
No, this horse, I'm not worried about that. I mean, I just hope, you know, he can work out a trip and runs to those. I was telling somebody, if you saw his last work and his gallop out here, and it was Bob Baffert's name or Brad Cox or Todd Pledge's name next to him, and you watched that gallop out and that work, you'd have him on your top two.
Well, he was an early favorite of mine, and I may have to circle back. Let's also the Tawny Port just off the win in the Lexington, and just
he'll really gallop for now. Yeah, I didn't. He worked the other day. I think I saw the tape of it. I don't really recall that. Barber Road, kind of an oddly configured race. I get it. They wanted him to go slow and then finish up, and he did. He was like in a race-like drive from the 316th pole, but he did. You know. Carry on around the turn. He galloped out, and I had him in a mile and 42-1, but that was off of 52 opening half. So he did show some significant energy.
But that's his style. That's how he's – if he's going to impact this
I mean, I think he's a little too slow here, and he's not one of my favorites. But I can't knock his work. Unojo, can't knock his work. I thought it was decent. You know, he went 59 and change. Wasn't really set down hard. Galloped out okay. So I think he's overmatched in here, but – you know, nothing I can see from his work would say he's not doing okay. Just going down.
Early voting.
Yeah, I haven't seen early. Messier, I saw his work on tape. Looked pretty good. I wish they had kept the tape going. Somewhere else. He looked like he had significant energy when they cut the tape off. And he's another one. You know, everyone said, wow, you know, Taiba beat him easily, and Taiba's going to move forward. And I just think Messier is the kind of horse, third start back off the layoff, he may be priming for his best race. If you look at his sheet numbers, the sheet numbers are telling you he paired up pretty good numbers. And I could see him moving forward, and he's going to be a pretty good price.
He's post-hype, too.
He's going to be a bigger price than he probably should be, unless Jack Wolf is in there with both hands, which what am I saying? Of course, he's going to be in there with both hands. It's a big pool, though, so, Jack, you should be okay.
I love it. Zozos, I got to see him in the flesh. Hadn't seen him since Fairgrounds.
He looked good working the other day.
Yeah,
my only, you know, caveat, he had his head cocked out all the way down the stretch, almost like he was, you know, looking at the crowd and to see the sights in the grandstand, but there was nobody in the grandstand. But then this morning he came out, he galloped, did it again, had his head cocked out, so I guess that's just him, so I'm not even going to worry about it. And
probably see him do it in his final work here next week.
Summer is tomorrow.
He's just getting used to the surroundings. I don't know what to make of him. Obviously, Crown Pride beat him pretty easily in the UAE Derby. He was on his left lead when he first came out here yesterday, but he corrected that. He was better today, so hard to say just from his game.
We'll monitor from a pedigree standpoint. He's kind of a curiosity. We talked to Sid Fernando on Wednesday, and we went over it. You know, very American bred. You know, the summer front out of the Badge of Silver Mare. And what I thought was interesting was that he negotiated the mile and 3/16 successfully off of a series of sprints. And from 6 to 9.5 and 6 and 7 to 9.5 is a big ask. And he's got seasoning. This will be career start number 8. So he's a curiosity. Summer is tomorrow. That gets us to Charge It. And, you know, everything people are saying about Taiba, Charge It's only going to be making his fourth start.
Yeah, no, I mean, I still think you're up against it. Look, everyone knows it's been well documented how green he was down the stretch in the Florida Derby. If he kept the straight path, he maybe wins. This horse, no doubt, has a ton of talent, but he's going to have to move forward from that greenness standpoint a whole lot in a short period of time. And, again, going from a significantly large 11-horse field to a 20, it's asking a lot, and Todd knows he's playing catch-up with him, the way he's worked him. I haven't, unfortunately, he worked the same day in Florida at Palm Beach Downs. That's simplification work at Gulfstream, so I wasn't there. I assumed it was going to be on tape, but they didn't tape it. And then the other day, I missed his work by one day getting here. It's supposedly on tape, but I haven't seen it, so... But from reading the fractions and reading the comments, I get what Todd was doing. It was another stiff work for a horse that, like I said, is playing catch-up. It sounds like it was a pretty good work. I hope I can get to see a tape of it before he will have one more work. I'm going to guess it might be a little easier next weekend, but maybe not. Maybe Todd thinks this horse needs, three big works to overcome the fact that he's only had 3 starts. And one thing that is significant, we saw him switch back leads in the stretch of the Florida Derby. Todd told me after the work at Palm Beach Downs that he, switched leads and stayed on his proper lead. And I think that's significant if he can do that.
Late additions to the field, Happy Jack and Doug O'Neill. We can wait on him till he gets here. And then this morning, Pioneer of Medina.
Looked fine.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he missed a few days of training this week. He was supposed to work Friday. He had a little setback, so he didn't work till today. You know, those kind of hiccups 2 weeks before the Derby ain't great, to be honest with you. And Todd gave him a significant work this morning. It was 5/8, officially, but it was really 7/8. Yeah. I mean, from the wire out. And Todd does this a lot with horses going into races, especially if they've been away, but he has his riders on the gallop out, set them down another quarter mile. Bob Baffert does the same thing. We've seen him do the similar things with his horses working out in California, and that's what this was. This was 7/8 of a mile. You know, he finished up reasonably well. He went in company, and they both did the same thing. Galloped out a mile. I think I had him in like 140. And again, all the tracks are different and all this stuff is different. But when you compare the fact that, simplification went out 137-1 and did it without any prodding at all from Junior Alvarado, who actually worked them. And, here's a horse that went 7/8 on depression and galloped out in 40. It's something to say anyway for what we saw from simplification. But, I thought Pioneer Medina looked fine today. It was I think exactly what Todd was looking for without having talked to him afterwards.
Let's round out the conversation with at least a quick survey of any of the fillies that are going to put what you expect is going to be a great show in the Oaks.
Yeah, I mean, just quick, I haven't seen any of Kathleen O's works. I know it was on tape the other day.
Yeah.
From Keeneland. I didn't really see it. yet. I will take a look at it. I've got Donald Harris is there at Keeneland, so he will be reporting on that for our workout report. Look, you can't fault her for anything she's done so far. I just don't know what she's beaten. You know, I just think the competition that she's faced there is going to be, it's going to get significantly tougher in here. She's going to have to prove that she could step up. I mean, she beat Goddess of Fire, who may be Todd's third best filly in this race. So that's my only caveat. And the numbers, if you go by the sheet numbers, she took a significant step forward off. You know, if you're a sheet guy, you're going to say she has to bounce. I don't know. You know, that's her thing, though. She needs to be outside. She's probably going to be wide. She got inside in the Devona Dale, and she got in some trouble. She didn't like the dirt in her face. So she's going to probably have an overland trip, so she's going to have to overcome that. And she's going to need some pace, you know, with her style. She's going to be back and probably back near the rear of the pack. Echo Zulu, saw her work yesterday. It was, again, you know, pretty much like Epicenter. Nothing to wow you. It was fine. I don't know her. I've been told she's not, you know, a workhorse that's going to wow you. So I'm just going to leave it at that. Her form is her form, and she's definitely one of the ones to beat in here. Her race in the Fairground Oaks was a good stepping stone, obviously, toward this. Nest, haven't really seen any of her recent works. I saw the one here on tape. It looked more like it was just a maintenance work with IRAD on her the other day. I'm sure she'll do something more significant coming up. And as for the others, let me see who I might have seen. Well, Secret Oath worked this morning, and I was a little disappointed, to be honest. She won 3/4 from the 5.5, which meant she finished a 16th of a mile past the wire. And she just didn't seem to have the energy you'd wanted to see finishing up or galloping out. So they actually asked her to go out a little more, and she was just okay. I was really hoping to see more from her. So that's it. I thought Shahama looked good the other day. I don't know where she fits in here off her races over there. But I thought she was a lot better than Goddess of Fire. And at least it was something that I caught my eye a little bit just watching that work on tape. And we'll see how she looks live here from now until race time when she works next week.
Hidden Connection galloping?
Hidden Connection. I think I saw her work on tape. I don't know if I've seen her gallop. She was asked to go a significant gallop out, if I remember right, 6 furlongs. She worked 5. She worked fine, and she was asked to go out 3/4. I think she went 13 and change. I had no, you know, positive or negative from what I saw.
Well, there's your more extensive survey. Perfect, Mike. Way to start the coverage as we
wait.
Yeah,
still
in.
A long way to go. I mean, it's amazing how much we've seen already, and I just got here. But, you know, kudos to the guys who put some of the stuff out on tape, because you just can't be in 3 places at one time, you know, leading up to this. And, you know, the old days, it was great. They all came here. They all had their at least one work here. 2 works here. Some of them, you know, I'm talking about the out of towners. Obviously, the locals have all their works here. But ever since Barkley won it and came in on top of the race to do it, trainers started staying home more and more for their last works. And we see this now with the California ones, with Timmy Actine. 2 of the Florida horses aren't coming up. There have been years Todd doesn't come up until the last work, but he's come in here, and luckily Zandon will come in here for his last work. So we'll get a good look at most of them. And the 2 of them that won't have works here, White of Barrio and Simplification, I've seen a lot of. And yeah, their works next week will be on tape. So,
and then you'll have the, you know, the edge in terms of watching them gallop up.
I wish Messier was coming here for his final work. I'd love to see his last work in person, because I think he's a significant player in here. But that's not going to be.
Mike Welch, everybody, DRF Welch, and of course you'll be offering the video wrap-up on a daily basis.
We're doing the video every day, and kudos to my producer, camera man, woman, person, camera person, Barbara Livingston. She does an unbelievable job, and she helps me get through these things because, you know, it's more than a one-man show. She deserves a lot of credit for producing these things. She does a great job. And we will be here every day with those probably through Thursday before the race. And then we will have before the Oaks, and then we will have an Oaks and Derby Day Clacker reports. Just as many horses as we've seen. Donald Harris is at Keeneland, and Dave Grenning is back in New York. He'll have some horses shipping in from New York. He'll have some reports on them, hopefully.
Nice.
So we'll have those 2 days of reports, and then Clacker report-wise, then we will start the Belmont report, not when Belmont opens, but after the Derby over, hopefully the weekend after, because we have not had anybody in New York. It's just too hard to staff all these places. But that's the plan right now. One
Excellent.
More week of Gulfstream Park Clacker reports to go to, and that'll end next weekend.
DRF Welch, your Clacker report, and you should be that much more ready to follow the action straight through until next weekend. Mike, thanks so much.
Looking forward to my Krispy Kreme
tomorrow
morning.
Boy, everybody's on me on the donuts. Tomorrow morning. There we go. Let's take a break, our second of the morning. And when we come back, Darren Rogers is going to join us next with the invocation, plus Austin Reed from Finger Lakes and Chris Griffin at Parks. A couple of very good steaks today. Pennsylvania bred steaks going on in Bensalem. We'll talk to Chris, get a couple of opinions, and get you rolling into the week. Back after this to Churchill Downs.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day of the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Experience the all-new Paddock Suite at Saratoga Racecourse. Available for groups of up to 80 guests, the venue features a climate-controlled lounge overlooking the Saratoga Paddock. Visit naira.com/Saratoga to book your group outing today.
At the Races with Steve Beck. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.